are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
All right, let's get into our mental health chat. We're talking about psychosis once again, and today focusing on living with psychosis. It's not all padded rooms and whispering shadows. Many people live with psychosis, they live, they work, and love just like anyone else. But the journey is not an easy one. And so today we're exploring the daily realities and the resilience behind the diagnosis. Guiding us through the conversation, we're joined once again by Hanley van der Westhuizen from the Vista Clinic. Good morning, Hanley. Welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Bonki. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us once again. I hope you had a good weekend.
Thanks, definitely. Cold in Pretoria. I don't know how the weather is where you are, but we are freezing up here.
Freezing is the word. Freezing is the word. And then add rain on top of that. I'm like, what's happening? Why is it raining in June?
Definitely.
Yeah. So let's get into the conversation for today, Hanley. What are some common challenges that individuals with psychosis face on a day-to-day basis?
Well, Bongi, we said so far that medication is quite a significant part of the treatment model. But even though we acknowledge that medication is really crucial, taking medication is definitely not a walk in the park. Managing the side effects of antipsychotic medications and maintaining consistent treatment can be very challenging. Mm-hmm. There are many side effects of antipsychotic medication, but it is important to know that the effect of the drugs can vary widely among individuals, both in type and severity. And while some people experience minimal or manageable side effects, others might encounter more significant issues. Okay. But some of the common side effects of the antipsychotic medications is weight gain, drowsiness or sedation, restlessness or akathisia. Akathisia is a persistent feeling of inner restlessness. Okay. You can imagine how difficult it is to constantly feel restless and feeling that underlying anxiety underneath your skin. Mm. Then another side effects are dry mouth, constipation, blurred vision. There's also hormonal effects like increased prolactin levels causing menstrual issues or sexual dysfunction. Then, very important, we do have extrapyramidal symptoms. That is movement problems like tremors, rigidity, or tardive dyskinesia. Now, these symptoms are mainly, see them in the typical antipsychotic administration. That is our first generation antipsychotic. Developed in the 1950s. But it is important that people know what tardive dyskinesia is. Mm-hmm. It is a movement disorder that can develop as a long-term side effect of certain antipsychotic medications. And it involves involuntary repetitive movements, often in the face. And, this can include grimacing. When you see someone approach you and there's a constant grimacing or tongue protrusion or lip smacking, or chewing movements, puckering, or rapid blinking. All those symptoms are key features of tardive dyskinesia. And you can imagine the impact of this on social interaction. Mm. It is important for people to understand this because once developed, tardive dyskinesia can be difficult to reverse, and symptoms may persist even after stopping the medication. It may start subtly, but it often worsens over the time if left unmanaged. However, if you see early signs of it, you know, it can very often be effectively managed by lowering a dose. Mm-hmm. And psychiatrists are very, they are very cognizant of the fact that they often start with the lowest dose possible. Mm-hmm. To manage side effects in the psychotic population. But if sometimes with a resistant psychosis, as we mentioned earlier in talks, it may become necessary to administer a first generation medication. And when you then start seeing, subtle signs of tardive dyskinesia, it's very important to to get back to your psychiatrist and report the the symptom. There are certain medications that are approved for treating tardive dyskinesia, so it is not, it's not in, permanent, as I say, but it is important early detection, early treatment, because the symptoms may persist if not treated earlier. Then it is also important to know that there's variability in side effects. There's really very much individual differences. Genetics, overall health, age are all factors that influence how a person experiences side effects. And then obviously the type of medication has got a huge influence. As mentioned, our first generation antipsychotics, those older class of antipsychotic medications, they primarily block dopamine D2 receptors in the brain, which help to reduce psychotic symptoms like hallucinations or delusions. But they often have a higher risk of movement-related side effects. But the newer generation of antipsychotics, those that were developed from the 1990s and onward, they work more complex. They also block the dopamine D2 receptors, but the other target neurotransmitted systems. And this broader action helps to reduce the psychotic symptoms, and they often have a generally lower risk of movement disorders like tardive dyskinesia. However, most of these medications are associated with weight gain, metabolic syndrome, and sometimes even cardiovascular risk. So, as said, for the psychotic individual, as much as medication is needed, and the disorder can't be treated without that intervention, it is definitely not a walk in the park, and people on medication need support to continue the medication use and to help with that.
Right.
And then, even if people are on medication, there can be still a slight, perceptual disturbance that can, disrupt their daily functioning. It can be very, very difficult to make decisions, if you've got a slight false belief or that can really influence your behavior. There are often cognitive difficulties, problems with concentration, memory, and decision making. It makes tasks really difficult. Emotional and mood challenges are often accompanied to the psychotic diagnosis, and that can affect motivation and emotional stability. And it can bring some unpredictability to everyday life. There are social difficulties. It's very often very challenging for the psychotic person to maintain relationships. And, they struggle with impaired functioning, like managing household tasks, employment, attending school can be very difficult. So also, sleep disturbances and disruptions in sleep. And we must remember that the medication also causes drowsiness, etc. Those can also make it very difficult to keep a job. So it is not an easy task to maintain daily living, and support is definitely needed.
Sure. That's a lot. That really is a lot. And with all of that said, then, how does psychosis affect a person's ability to work or to attend school, just to carry on, regular life responsibilities?
No, there's a significant impact on a person's ability to attend school, university, or work. And the extent varies, again, depending on the severity of symptoms, support systems, treatment, and individual resilience. So this is really very individual, and there's not a cookie-cutter approach to this. But generally, we see cognitive difficulties. There's problem with concentration, memory, and executive functioning. Executive functioning is your planning ability, your ability to organize your life and your work. And you can imagine how that impacts on learning and performing tasks. And we see things like a student might forget instructions or may struggle to focus during lectures or just have difficult to complete assignments on time. So that definitely is difficult. And obviously, if hallucinations and delusions persist, that can be very distracting. And it can definitely, worsen the ability to complete studies or work. And then obviously the emotional and mood challenges definitely causes the inconsistency in you know, motivation, and it may cause a reduced energy and interest in academic and work activities. Work and schooling usually happens within social settings, and those challenges in social interactions like paranoia make collaboration with classmates or colleagues very uncomfortable and stressful. And then there's also this the fear of judgment because of stigma that can cause social withdrawal. Fatigue, side effects of the medication. You know, we just mentioned drowsiness, weight gain, and other side effects. Mm-hmm. That does have a marked effect on people's ability to go to work and go to school and be effective there. Then obviously the fluctuating symptoms and the relapses that also cause inconsistency. But there is good news in this. There are really keen legal frameworks in South Africa that help people in this regard. So within the employment arena, there's the Employment Equity Act. It was amended in 1998. Mm-hmm. And the main purpose of this act is to promote equal opportunity and fair treatment in employment through the elimination of unfair discrimination. And there is protection for people with disabilities. Okay. And this act explicitly protects the individuals with disability, including mental health conditions, against unfair discrimination. And it asks for reasonable accommodation. There's the Labor Relations Act of 95. There's the Code of Good Practice on Employment with People with Disabilities. There's the Constitution of South Africa, who guarantees right to equality and protection from discrimination on grounds of including mental health. So all of these are really important, and the person with psychosis have the right to ask for reasonable adjustments. And that is also true for the educational framework. Mm-hmm. There, again, we have the Constitution of South Africa. There's the South African Schools Act. There's the SAQA and the Department of Basic Education, who emphasizes on inclusive education. There's the White Paper on Special Needs Education of 2001. Mm-hmm. I can go on. You know, there's charters, disability rights charters and policies, and Educational White Paper of 2019. And what this actually means is that they can really be a right to ask for reasonable accommodation. What reasonable accommodation within the work environment looks like is that one can ask for flexible work hours or part-time schedules. Mm-hmm. One can ask for quiet or low-stimulating work environment. One can ask for allowing breaks when needed. And then when there's symptom flare-up, one can ask for adjusted workload or deadlines being, just extended during these times. And for academic accommodations, we can ask for extended deadlines for assignments or exams. We can ask for quiet places for breaks or test taking. We can ask for note-taking assistance or recording lectures, and then obviously flexibility around attendance policies because of relapse or symptom flare-up can very often cause inconsistency in productivity or ability to concentrate. Mm. So all these practical supports are there, and the way that people can access it is to have conversations with their HR and the educational board. And obviously, these must be within reasonable limits. The laws say that it should not, require significant or undue hardship, significant difficulty or expense for the employer,
okay,
or the institution. But in the past, we have worked usually very good success in negotiation with employers or schools. Mm. Because our South African law are very much focused on inclusion and diversity,
yeah,
and mental health are seen as a disability.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what coping strategies do people often find helpful?
Yeah. I'm going to refer to the model that we use at Ister Clinic where I work, and we use the multidisciplinary approach, and for the reason that it's really outcome-based, and there's been significant research in terms of indicating success with this particular approach. So the multidisciplinary approach means that there are within a team many professions that focus on this one individual to assist from various angles to help with coping. First of all, the psychiatrist is there to help with medication management, and this is really one of the primary influences. Then the clinical psychologist is there to help with therapy and counseling, usually engaging in a cognitive behavioral therapy to challenge delusions or manage hallucinations. And then there's also processing trauma that is an important part. As we mentioned earlier, the trauma plays a huge part in triggering the symptoms. So EMDR therapy or the trauma-related CBT therapy is often the ideal choices. Then, very important, there's a lot of participating in supportive therapies. And our occupational therapists are usually very, very successful on a practical level, the patient with coping skills. And they help helping the patient to maintain routine and structure. And that would be, for a daily routine for sleep, meals, and activities. And they usually use planners or checklists to organize daily activities. We also focus on stress reduction techniques. That is usually through practicing mindfulness, meditation, or deep breathing exercises. And often it is important that people, are encouraged to take care of their creative side, because taking part in creative activities like hobbies has a very calm and relaxing effect. We also help with social support, not only through supporting the network of family, friends, and support groups, but also helping with interpersonal skill development. Our dietitians help with healthy lifestyle choices to mitigate the side effects of the medication. So we promote regular physical activity and also helping them to find a balanced diet. We also help with environmental adjustments, creating a calm and safe, organized living space, limited exposure to stressful or triggering situations where possible is usually a help. And then education, psychoeducation through our psychoeducators and psychiatric nursing staff is invaluable, because the more people know and the more the family know, the more you can prevent, the more you can recognize, and the more you feel in control.
All right. And then how do symptoms interfere with personal relationships, you think?
That is really a significant impact. One can imagine if someone suffers from disorganized thinking of speech, that conversations will be confusing and it would be hard to follow, and it will often lead to misunderstandings. And then equally, hallucinations or delusions, the perceptions that others, that you don't share a shared belief system, can lead to suspicion and mistrust. And this can really destabilize relationship and can lead to very strained or even damaged relationships. The emotional and mood changes brings a component of unpredictability into the interactions that makes it very hard for friends or family to know what to expect. And on the individual side, the person with a psychosis can really experience a lot of frustration or irritability, because they usually feel extremely misunderstood. And the issue of stigma can lead to an increased social withdrawal and isolation, not only in the patient but also in the family. So, I, and on this side, I would just like to say it's not really individuals that grow through the trauma of psychosis. It's usually family and relationships that goes through the trauma of psychosis. You know, if somebody in a relationship gets diagnosed, it causes a huge amount of emotional strain and stress. Because first of all, when this diagnosis comes, people are really overwhelmed. They don't understand it. They feel anxious. They feel worried. And there's a lot of uncertainty about the illness that can cause ongoing stress. Usually there's feelings of guilt and blame. Family members or loved ones may wonder whether they have contributed to the condition. They may blame themselves, feel guilty about not being able to prevent it. You know, there's a lot of emotional feelings that get triggered about when the diagnosis is done.
Yeah.
There's also grief and loss. Families often grieve the loss of the person they knew before the onset of the psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone who was more functional, more social, more emotionally available. And often for parents, I see that they mourn the missed opportunities of their child. You know, they maybe dreamt about grandchildren and it's unsure whether this may actually happen.
Mm.
And psychosis really changes very often the person's personality or abilities. And then with this change, you know, the family dynamics and the roles changes, you know, the family roles may shift. Parents may take on additional caregiving responsibilities. Siblings may feel, or the patient might become more dependent on family members, you know, and these can really, tensions can arise from disagreement about treatment or caregiving or managing behavior. So, there's a huge implication for the family dynamics or the relationship dynamics. And then also on a practical level, there's practical and financial challenges. Mm-hmm. There's cost of treatment, medication, and therapy, and hospitalization. It can cause significant financial strain.
Yeah.
And then it's also time-consuming, the caregiving responsibilities. You know, it may affect the caregiver's employment, education, or personal plans. And then the stigma and the social isolation can also involve the family as a whole, because often families may experience discrimination from their community, and it can lead to feelings of shame and social withdrawal, and they may hide the illness to want to avoid the judgment.
Mm.
So it really has a huge impact. But despite all these challenges, many families find ways to adapt and support their loved one, and they foster hope. Mm-hmm. And there's always support groups, family therapy, and education about mental health, which can help families through this difficult journey.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is important that we must acknowledge that more people are affected by this diagnosis in quite a severe manner.
Mm-hmm. And as we do that, how do you think we can create more supportive environments?
For me, and this is not a learned answer, this is not an answer that comes out of an academic workbook, it's just through personal experience working with patients, I would say the most supportive thing that we can do for a person who's psychotic is to set realistic expectations from that
mm-hmm.
person.
Mm-hmm.
And that involves that you need to understand their current abilities, their symptoms, their treatment progress, while you also try to be as compassionate and supportive as you can be. And it's so important to know that every person has an individual pathway in this journey. The guidelines are general, and it's really not specific. And in realistic expectations, you know, it is very good for families to expect personal care and hygiene, and they can encourage consistent routines like showering, brushing teeth, dressing. But they should also understand that some days may be more challenging than others.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rather supportive to set gentle reminders and establish as simple as you can routines that can help independence over a period of time.
Mm.
It's also realistic to expect of the person to manage basic chores like making meals, tidying up, or doing limited laundry. but also recognizing that these tasks are stressful and complex, and it needs to be broken down into smaller steps, and to celebrate even the small successes that the person achieved. Mm-hmm. Managing medication and appointments are a difficult one because we want to encourage independence, but we need to offer organization and transportation if needed. So it helps to have tools like pool organizers and try not to take this task out of the person's hands, mm-hmm. because this is a basic responsibility that they need to take up. Employment education, returning to work at school may take time, and it may start as part-time, and supported roles can be more realistic. And here, the collaboration with the employers or the school, or the negotiation with the work or the school, sometimes the person will need assistance in this. It's very difficult for the patient often to do this right. themselves. So I think, when we say this, the goal is to promote independence and quality of life in the person who suffers the diagnosis, not perfection. Right. So expectations should really be realistic, and one should make peace with the fact that the person is not the same as previously and mm-hmm. before the diagnosis was done.
Got it. Sure. Well, thank you so much, Hanley, for coming through once again and giving us all this very important information about living with psychosis, how the greater community can, be involved and be better educated, better equipped, and of course, all the laws and the regulations around, the rights and privileges of people living with psychosis, as well as employers themselves. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for coming through, and look forward to connecting again on Wednesday.
Thanks so much, Bongi. Take care.
All right.
You are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.